Welcome to Mission Minded, the podcast where we explore outside-the-box thinking in carrying out Christ's Great Commission. On today's episode, we are joined by John Spinn. Now here's our host, Jim Tingler.
Hi and welcome to the Mission Minded Podcast. I'm Jim Tingler, and I'll be your host today as we have special guest John Spinn. Hey, John.
How's it going, Jim? Good to be here.
It's going good. So, John, you're a member of the iTech team. And how long have you been working with iTech?
About 4.5 years.
4.5 years. Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, I'll be honest with you. I woke up this morning excited about this interview. So it's going to be fun. There's a lot of things when you go in and you're into something like this, you might not know somebody, but I feel like I know you pretty well. But I would say that on the initial, I guess, meeting you at first, I would not have, I guess, thought as much as I've thought about you now. So what I mean by that, so example, my wife thinks you're a very serious person. I've been trying to convince her otherwise, but when you first, I guess, John Spinn comes into a room, you kind of carry a serious tone. So it's
some
one of those
settings, sure.
Yeah, but you're one of those guys that likes to cut it up, and there's a lot of layers to John Spinn. So I thought, for those who might not know you, maybe we can get past some of those initial seriousness, and before we dive into more serious things.
Sure, sure.
So I had a few fun facts about John Spinn. John Spinn, you're one of the last users of the BlackBerry phone.
That's true. Up until a few months ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
You just switched over.
I just switched, yeah. So bittersweet time of my life, but.
So why did you stick with BlackBerry for so long?
You know, I just love the physical keyboard of being able to push the keys, especially if you're typing email on your smartphone. I still miss the keyboard, but.
Yeah. Now, you're in a world of Apple devices on our team. A lot of people is on that. You know, I wouldn't say we're totally Apple, but I would say the majority of our team uses mm-hmm. Apple products. Mm-hmm. You were also one of the only Lenovo users as well on the team.
It's true. It's true.
Are you still using a Lenovo?
Well, I had a Lenovo when I moved to Florida, and then I bought a Mac. And I kind of joked with my brother, I was going through a midlife crisis. I got out of the Army, I moved to Florida, and I bought a Mac computer, things I never saw myself doing. And then I bought a new Lenovo, I don't know, a few months back. My wife has my old Mac, so I've kind of transitioned back. But it's okay. I can respect both worlds. I'm all things to all men, right, Jim?
That's right. That's right. So another fun fact about John Spinn. You've memorized the area codes of the United States.
Some of them, yeah.
Well, let's throw a few examples out
okay.
there.
All right, we'll see.
Colorado Springs.
Oh, that's easy. It's a little 719.
71, okay. Dallas, Texas.
214. It's one of them. There's multiple Dallas. The 214 is, that's the one that comes to mind.
Okay. How about San Diego, California?
619.
I mean, I could go through the list, but oftentimes we have tour groups come through iTech and, you know, we'll talk about where they're from. And I'll just throw out there, John, what's the area code? Just as a test. And every time, you're on it. So why did you spend the time memorizing the area code? On first glance, John would not seem like a guy that would memorize the area codes of the U.S., but that's a layer to John Spinn. So help me understand why you would invest your time.
Well, it goes back when I was in the Army and patients would come in. So we'd have their paper chart, had their social security number. And it used to be the first three digits of your social security would tell where you were born. So each state would, you know, there was a social security area code map. And so So when the soldiers would come in, I'd look at their social, and I had my map of the social security numbers, and I could pin it down to the state they were born in. And then if I saw their cell phone number, I could pin it down to pretty close to where they were from, and I would say, oh, you must be from. And then people would kind of take a step back, like, whoa, how'd you know that? And so that's how I got started doing that several years ago. So just a, connection point with people. So
you mentioned a couple things. One, you're a dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And so you serve as a training dentist on the iTech team.
Mm-hmm.
But you also mentioned being in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we'll start with what got you into dentistry?
Well, dentistry, I was in college. Maybe I should start with, in the end of high school, I watched the movie Saving Private Ryan, and I listened to the book, The Testament by John Grisham. And those were very influential. God used those in my life, and I really wanted to be a missionary physician. That's really what I thought about all throughout college. And I learned about the Army Scholarship Program, thinking about it on the medical side. And then I went to Global Missions Health Conference as a junior in college, and I heard David Stevens speak, the former CEO of the Christian Medical and Dental Association. He said that dentistry was the greatest shortage on the mission field, and I had never really thought about that, and that kind of planted the seed. And I continued to pursue, that was my goal, is to be a physician, and I studied for the medical college admission test, and took a summer off before my senior year of college and took a Kaplan preparation course, and I studied, and I did not do very well at all. I didn't know at the time, but I was thinking about dentistry, and my dad said, he said, well, go ahead. He said, why don't you go ahead and take the dental test? He said, if you want to take it, I'll pay for it. So I like 10 days after I took the medical college admission test, I took the dental test, and I got my results instantly. It was on computer, and it was I did really well. And I wasn't really thinking seriously about dentistry, but I waited about 2 more months and I got my score back, and I didn't do very well at all, but I didn't really know what to do with that. And then I went back to the Global Missions Health Conference, and I met a guy named Bob Meyer, who ended up being, he's a good friend of mine, a mentor to me, and he was giving a lecture, Portable Dentistry in an Austere Environment. That was the name of the lecture he was giving at the GMHC, and this was the following year. And within 3 days of meeting him and talking to him, he had been an Army dentist, and I came back and I was like, okay, I really feel like God has closed the door on medicine, and I applied for dental school, and then I applied for an Army scholarship, and that's basically went straight from college into dental school and then the Army scholarship program, and so went on active duty when I got out of dental school. So that was kind of my path into the Army and into dentistry.
So how long were you in the Army?
Not quite 8 years, about 7 years, seven years, 8 months. So
I love some of the stories you've shared about being in the Army. I think my favorite one is when there was a prisoner that thought you were going to
yes.
Would that be okay to share that?
Sure,
story?
Sure. Okay. This was 2000. I was in Afghanistan from October 2010 to September 2011, and I think it was fairly early on in my time. It was a Saturday night. I got a phone call from a guy that I knew was at another forward operating base, and he said, "Hey, we've got this prisoner here. He keeps complaining about tooth pain, and we can't bring him to you. Can you come to us?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I can come over." And I said, it was a Saturday night. I said, Sunday was my only day off. I said, it's probably the best time for me to come is on a Sunday. So I called the Rotary Terminal, and they had 2 seats on a helicopter the next morning at 5:30 in the morning. So I loaded down all my stuff that I thought I would need, and I showed up at FOB Airborne. This was in, Regional Command Eastern part of Afghanistan. And then I got there, and there was this guy, this prisoner of war, and Not typically, the typical, none of them are, as people would say, you never meet one of them that looks intimidating. This was like a 90-pound man wearing an orange jumpsuit. And so when I came in, he kept repeating the same phrase, and the translator was trying to say, I'm innocent. And so this guy was convinced that they had brought me in to torture him. And so I, and the guy at the forward operating base, he said, don't worry. He's a dentist. He's here to help you. He said, if you've got anything to say, save him for the interrogator. He said, but this guy's here to help you. And so I gave him, you know, pretty good cocktail of local anesthetic and waited plenty of time. And I took the tooth out, and the guy was just dumbfounded that it didn't hurt. Like, he was convinced that they were bringing me to torture him. And so anyway, we got the tooth out, and that was maybe one of my better stories of my deployment. But so, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about your time overseas and in the mm-hmm. Army that you've shared, but what made you think about even leaving the Army? It sounded like you really enjoyed that time. I mean, you were setting you're very intentional with the opportunities that you had, obviously memorizing area codes and investing in people, but that wasn't the long-term plan.
No, I mean, I had always seen myself as being in the Army for a career. And I'd always seen myself as, you know, retiring, you know, taking my Army pension and moving overseas and living and working overseas. You know, in 2011, I got introduced to Empower, which is a similar ministry that started out of ITEC several years earlier. And I went on my first trip with them in 2011 and got introduced to the training model. And it was kind of interesting because I was coming, you know, in Afghanistan, I was living on a forward operating base, and I saw we had special operations guys, we had Ranger Regiment guys, and we had Special Forces guys, and totally different mindsets. You know, the Ranger Regiment guys, they hunt down bad guys in the middle of the night. That's what they do. And you know, I was in Afghanistan in 2011, and we'd been there 10 years, and they were doing these night raids unassisted, weren't involving the Afghan National Army or the Afghan National Police. And I thought, wow, if we keep doing this, we are never going to leave this country. We're not involving the local nationals. And then I saw the Special Forces model, which is totally different. It's, you know, we liaison, we live among the local army, we train up the local army so that they can continue on. And so this was happening in 2011. I was in Afghanistan, and then, you know, at the same, I went and saw Empower's approach of training nationals, and at first I was skeptical, but I had a friend who had been on an Empower trip, a guy that grew up in the same church. He was a few years ahead of me in dental school, and so I wanted to, you know, see what this was all about. And I was, you know, really kind of skeptical, pretty doubtful. But then I saw two guys that had returned from a year earlier, and some of these guys had taken out a few hundred teeth, two of them. The two guys that returned had each taken out a lot of teeth, and you could tell. And I was really impressed, and that really, seeing the returning students really led me to believe that this really could work. And so that kind of, you know, and then so I started doing, you know, in the Army I got 30 days leave every year, so I could do about two trips a year, and that was kind of my goal, was just to continue doing that short term. And in 2014, Ebola hit, and just there was a lot of regulation on being able to travel got a lot more difficult when I got denied going on a trip to Uganda, and then in 2015 things calmed down. I ended up coming on a trip with ITEC, and I was with Empower. We were doing a dental training, and then ITEC was doing a medical training in the same location, and Trina and Heather were doing medical training, and Jamie Saint and I were roommates, and I'd met Jamie. He probably didn't remember me, but I had met Jamie before, and I knew other, you know, the whole Saint family story. And Jamie and I were roommates that week, and we got to talking, and you know, we, after the trip was over, we were texting each other, and he said, hey, do you want to come with us to the Democratic Republic of Congo? This was the November of 2015. And I said, well, I said, yeah, I'd love to come. And then I went on the State Department travel list, and I saw it was listed. And I said, well, I said, the Army's not going to let me go. And I said, maybe I should just get out of the Army. And I was kind of joking, you know, one of those, if you're joking, I'm joking. If you're serious, I'm serious. One of those. And a few days later, I got an email from Jamie saying, hey, you know, what would you think about moving to Florida? And getting out of the Army and moving to Florida and working with our dental program. And And I had never really thought about that as even an option. And so I really had kind of been thinking, you know, continue on the Army, doing the short-term trainings. And so that was really, that was just something that I had never really considered as a more frequent, more longer-term option of doing short-term trainings more frequently.
So when you talk about a training trip, what does that entail? I mean, you're a dentist. Mm-hmm. What exactly are you training somebody to do?
So most of our training trips are extractions, teaching people how to extract teeth. And so our training trips are typically a day and a half of classroom. You know, the first, we have our slideshows about 110, 115 slides. And so try to get through the first two-thirds of the slideshow on the first day. And by the end of the first day, have the students giving injections to each other. And then, you know, the second morning we'll try to finish the rest of this last third of the slideshow and then start seeing patients. And so it's a very different, you know, a lot of people are very skeptical, you know, because it really bucks the American model of, you know, it's very much a trade school approach. But we're working in areas, you know, some of these African countries have one dentist for 1 million people, you know, and we can't fathom. In the United States, a shortage area is one dentist for 5,000 people. And so we just, and really the sad reality, even I work as a dentist here in Central Florida, and we're graduating dentists from American dental schools that go to school for 4 years and don't know how to take out teeth, simple erupted teeth cases. And you know, I last year in May, I came back from Nigeria, and I got back on a Tuesday. I went to work on Wednesday, and I saw a patient that had been referred to an oral surgeon to extract two erupted teeth, and they were in my chair, and we treated this lady, and I realized any of the people we had graduated the week before in Nigeria could have successfully done this case. And you know, we're you know, our grad, you know, we hope that our students extract 20 to 30 teeth in the training week, and that's more than, sadly, more than some of the students get in a American dental school training setting, because the training is so diluted with all these other facets of dentistry that you're having to learn. You're learning crown and bridge and pediatrics, orthodontics, endodontics, you know, all these other things, and we just keep the focus, the training very focused. It's just about extractions, and not everybody gets it, not everybody graduates, but again, you have to think about the context of where you're working, where, you know, there might be a dentist for 1 million people. And it's not like you and me driving to Orlando on a nice interstate road and we have our own cars. This is, you know, transportation is, so most people can't even fathom the context of where we're working. And we're working in rural areas. We're not trying to compete with professional dentistry, but we're trying to offer, you know, some level of dental care to people. And it's an evangelistic tool. That's our main goal. You know, we're a ministry. We want to give, you know, Christ followers opportunities to share the gospel. And so that's what we're doing.
So what kind of opportunities does this training offer? I mean, once these guys are trained, they're now able to perform extractions in a local community?
That's the goal, yes. And you know, not everybody, you know, completes the training. We have to cut students, but you know, in its most ideal form, that's the goal, that people will, you know, we have an example in, you know, in Liberia. We've got a guy that was trained in January of 2017. His name is Stanley, and you know, Stanley, when I went to Liberia last year, he had extracted over 1,000 teeth and seen over 400 patients. He had it all documented, and they have a clinic there, their base in Swedru. And, you know, the American missionary that lives there, he said, you know, the nearest place to get a tooth extracted is $100 bus, just transportation to get there is $100. And that's not reasonable for these people. And so we trained two more students from their ministry last year. And I just got the report this morning, actually. It was, they saw 26 patients last month and took out 36 teeth. And so that's really the goal, is that people like that are ministry-minded will use the training and really, you know, you're meeting a felt need in the community, but you're also, using it as an evangelistic tool. And the, you know, this, you know, there's a lot of parallels between sin and decay, you know, decay in the mouth, and you know, it's kind of a natural talking point with you and the patient of, you know, the parallel between sin and decay. And I was in Papua New Guinea one time, and the same word for extract a tooth, racim, is the same word. They went to church on Wednesday night, and it said Jesus came to remove our sins, the same word in their language, racim, same word. So there's a lot of parallels, and we try to incorporate that into the training, you know, the students, of helping them see the parallels and using that when they're talking to patients about, you know, the spiritual parallel, giving them a conversation point with the patient.
So it's an evangelistic tool. So you train Christ followers to be able to perform dentistry or extractions mainly, mm-hmm. and be able to just love on people in a practical way. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine that if there's one dentist per million people, there might be a few problems they might encounter.
True. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, and you know, some of the, yeah, the things that you see, you know, I mean, I remember being in Liberia last year, you know, the cases that, you know, these are, we had a guy had a huge sublingual space infection, submandibular space infection, you know.
What is that?
He had a huge swelling. It's a tooth that, a necrotic tooth that had, you know, way too long in the mouth. And
so the tooth got infected at some point.
Right, and it spread. And so, you know, Stanley took the tooth out, you know. And that's what you have to do. You got to get rid of the source of the problem, get rid of the source of the infection. And, you know, and so it's really good that he's there, you know, and it was encouraging just to see him doing the things that we had taught him to do, you know. And so, so that's encouraging when you can see people you've trained using the skills that, you know, that they've been taught.
So kind of big picture, going back to John's spin and who you are. There's, you know, if I were to introduce, this is my friend John Spinn, he's a dentist. Most people think of dentists, they kind of have this idea of what that is, what that lifestyle looks like. But you're a guy who has set his life up to be available to go on these short-term training trips. You locally work in the county. Mm-hmm. So what type of work is going on there at the county?
Right, I work for the county health department,
right.
In Florida. A lot of at least the larger counties have a dental department in their public health department, and we have a clinic that's, you know, geared. I mean, anybody can technically come. It's geared more for lower income. Our primary funding source is pediatric Medicaid. I see mainly adults, but I do extractions on adults. But the nice thing for that work for me is I'm an hourly employee for the state, and I'm very flexible. You know, my previous supervisor, a Christian lady, very supportive of the work that iTech does, and you know, so, you know, I feel for a lot of my friends because a lot of them are heavily in debt. You know, they own their own office, and there's nothing wrong with owning your own office. But I worked in private practice for about 6 months, and I'm thankful I had that experience, but I have no desire for that. And I see people that are just, so a lot of them would love to be able to travel, but they can't. You know, they have to worry about their office overhead, paying their staff when they're gone. And, you know, just being out of the office for a week to go on like an iTech trip is, for a lot of people, it's just very hard. And so I'm just thankful to have the flexibility. You know, thankfully, you know, the Army paid for my dental education. I came out of the Army, you know, no debt. And I'm just fortunate to have the flexibility that I do that allows me to do other things than just dentistry. So it is nice to, you know, not be owned by, you know, engulfed in just the ownership and the management of a practice. So I'm thankful for that. I'm not, you know, I'm able to do what I do.
Well, it's an encouragement to me to see that you wrestle with that. How do I set my life up to be available for God's work? And like you said, I mean, that working in a practice is there's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm. And there's opportunities that
absolutely
people that own their own office have that I don't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the goal of this podcast is to interview people who have wrestled with, what does it look like for me to live out the Great Commission in my own personal life? And I think that you have wrestled with that several times through, as we just mm-hmm. heard. I mean, whether you're at the Global Missions Health Conference, trying to figure out this path for your career mm-hmm. and setting that up, setting up your life now. And there's a lot of layers to John Spinn, but you continue to challenge me and encourage me. So I appreciate having you on the iTech team.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you. It's good to be here. I've enjoyed it here, you know.
There's, some people that are fans of sports mm-hmm. and can have a lot of, knowledge about different teams and players and their where they played in college and whatever. I've said that John Spinn does the same thing with mission work and organizations and just studies these out. Tell me a little bit, is that one of your hobbies to research this?
Well, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm a professional networker, whatever that means. You know, part of what I do at iTech, I do go to a fair amount of Christian conferences and dental meetings and kind of, you know, meet people and tell people about what we're doing. But, you know, I think that, you know, as you say, oftentimes, Jim, we want to be a hub and we want to be a resource of even people that don't fit into the mold of what iTech does. We want to try to help everybody that crosses up. How can we encourage them to take the next step of where God is leading them? And so I just like to be aware and know what's going on. Look at Jonah 1:8. The pagan sailors are asking these, you know, who are you? What's your occupation? Of what people are you? And those four basic questions that they ask, really, those are their conversation starter, but it's also just gathering information. And so, you know, we run into people at conferences or whatever that stop by our booth and, you know, we don't have anything, but I try to, okay, if they're doing something that we don't do, but I know somebody that does, try to connect them, you know, try to know who does what, you know, and so that's a role I see for us and myself in the Christian ministry world of, you know, well, that might not be what we do, but we'll try to, I know people that do what you're looking for. Let's try to get you connected, you know, and try to, you know, you're working in the same part of the world. Well, you need to know this guy because I know him and he's doing what you're doing. And so just trying to, you know, do our part to connect people that may not know about each other. And so, but yeah.
Well, you're good at it. You often have a connection somehow. You mention a name, you'll know there's 3 degrees of separation to John Spinn. So if you're in the mission world, you've been diving into it. So it's definitely an asset to our team. And there's other hobbies that you're involved in as well. There's you like to work on washing machines.
Well, I like to work with my hands. So anything problem solving, you know, and you know, one of the things that I do here at iTech, kind of a side role, I guess, we have the iTech homes and I kind of oversee, I mean, I do some of the work myself, sometimes it's delegating others, but any plumbing, electrical, anything, you know.
So there's a story, and we should probably wrap it up, but I think this is, my goal is to try to kind of pull back some of the layers of John Spinn. So somebody might get to know you. I think you're a person who, it challenges me, like I said, but there's somebody who wrestles with what does it look like to live out, hey, the Great Commission in my own life. But so there's a story, your wife Amy, you're married, mm-hmm. and you and your wife were on a cruise.
Okay.
And so you just got back to port and you're coming out, getting in the car after this trip. And so you see somebody that is having car trouble. You remember the story?
Yeah, this was several months ago. We were driving up from Fort Lauderdale. Yeah, we stopped for gas, and this guy pulls in this kind of rickety minivan, and just water is gushing out. And I was like, oh. And it was one of those, you know, I have a toolbox that, you know,
By the way, we just weighed that toolbox. So the toolbox weighed just under 67 pounds, which is impressive.
Yeah.
Because you drive a Prius.
We keep it behind the seat. No, it's fine. Yeah. So this guy, I stopped and, and I sometimes I shudder at how many times the Holy Spirit's, convicting me to do something and I ignore God's voice. But I was like, okay, I need to help this, need to try to help this guy. And so I said, I said, this looks like your radiator's bad. I said, I tell you what, and we found an AutoZone down the street. I said, meet me there. Let's try to figure out. So I went in the store, rented a pressure tester, pumped it up, just massive radiator leak. And anyway, so Sunday afternoon, did a radiator change in the parking lot of AutoZone down in somewhere between Fort Lauderdale and Boca Raton. So anyway, it was a...
No, but it wasn't just that. There were people that pulled up into the AutoZone who were also having car trouble that you started helping as well.
I think people thought I was a sidewalk mechanic for hire, and
that tends to happen to you. So tell me what happened at Cracker Barrel recently.
Well, I was at Cracker Barrel with my pastor, and I was wearing what I normally wear to work, the dental office, dress pants, collared shirt, and this guy was getting ready to leave. I was kind of the last table before you go out into where you pay, and he said, "Excuse me, are you the manager?" And if I had been on my feet, I would have pulled Detroit Towns and said, "Well, it depends who's asking." But I said, "No." I said, "But what's going on? Maybe I can help you." And so he said, "Well, I just wanted to let you know our server. He did a really good job." I said, "Okay." And I said, "Well, great." And so anyway, I came back and bragging to the staff here at ITEC that I'm also the manager of Cracker Barrel on 200 and I-75. So.
Well, I think that sums up your heart. You're a willing servant. You're ready to go. The question that you asked, how can I help you? And I think if we were intentional to ask that question around us, and whether it be, somebody needs a little help with their car, or somebody at Cracker Barrel, or even being willing to travel overseas to try and train and invest in somebody that... Who knows the adventure that God might have for us if we would just ask that question, how can I help?
That's true.
So, well, John, it's been a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having
today.
Me on. Yeah, yeah. So,
and thank you for joining us for this episode of the Mission Minded Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Mission Minded. For more information on today's topic and show notes, please visit our website, itechusa.org. Mission Minded Podcast is produced by ITEC. The goal of this podcast is to inspire conversations about Great Commission participation. The views, organizations, and individuals represented, interviewed, and discussed on the podcast do not necessarily represent an official position or formal partnerships with ITEC.